Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
It's all happening, and it's only Tuesday, and we're not even in the same week yet of the NHL draft, but the trades have commenced, or at least singular. Anyway, welcome in. We have a goalie swap to speak of, Philadelphia and Toronto.
Yeah, first of all, when you say it's all happening, it triggers one of my favorite movies.
Okay.
It's a quote from Almost Famous.
Mm-hmm.
Good movie. Good music movie. If you're into music and whatever, great. But they're like, it's all happening. It's all happening. Yes, it's all happening. We get here today. We're going to talk about a lot of different things. We're going to have our draft expert again. Scott Wheeler is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. But, you know, Kevin Weeks puts out a tweet, a picture of Joseph Woll with eyes emoji, maybe an hour ago, and we're like, oh, Weeks is making us, speak or whatever. And then maybe 30 minutes later, boom, it was announced that the Flyers and the Leafs have made a trade, which may or may not affect the goalie market at some point. But the two big players for me, like, is the goalie swap. It's Sam Hurston, who was an RFA with the Flyers, going to Toronto. Joseph Woll, who still has 2 years left at $3.6 million, going to Philadelphia. But you're saying, Philadelphia, don't they have a number one goalie in Dan Vladar? Yeah, they do. But at the same time, just...
They wanted a better competition.
They want better competition. They want better tandem. There is also defensemen being swapped. Simon Benoit going to Philly. Emil Andre going from Philly to Toronto. There's a third round pick also in that conversation. But the main piece for me right now is focusing at the goaltenders, knowing that Joe Woll, who is... thought to be like the number one guy, like the guy that was going to take over in Toronto, is on his way to Philly to be the 1B to Dan Vladar. So that's a significant move here on June the 16th.
Well, it is. I mean, obviously, Woll had personal issues to start last season.
Yes.
And
injuries issues
and,
as well.
And it was a challenging year for the entire crease from a health standpoint in Toronto. So I think, if anything, he lost a little bit of momentum that had been built within, you know, the Maple Leafs nation from a fan standpoint of how they viewed their crease.
Contractually, how quick does it change?
Well, contractually, he was similar to Stolarz, obviously.
Yes.
So it really was going to be a bit of a sprint to see who could take the lead here. Now, one assumes that it's Stolarz with Ersson, again, with a fresh start, maybe able to challenge. But, of course, they're in the Calder Cup final. They've got Akhtiamov. They've got Hildeby. So it's interesting if uneventful or almost insignificant, I think, for Leaf fans at this point, as far as, like, it's not like they have a game-changing number one that has come in. It's just the competition in their crease has changed, whereas Philadelphia really looks like, on the heels of getting back to the playoffs, they're just trying to cement, if not guarantee, as much as possible in their eyes that they can have trust night in, night out in the crease.
How quick things changed. 2 years ago, Toronto had the best tandem in the NHL. You look at the team save percentage, Woll and Stolarz and what they did. That's 2 years ago. And then last year, terrible year for the Leafs in the crease. Stolarz is hurt. Woll has injuries and takes some personal leave. And then, they make the deal. Now, the Flyers... the Flyers... like, they're making a step forward.
Right.
They're looking at it saying, like, we made the playoffs last year, and we are taking a step forward.
And they made their step forward after moving on from John Tortorella.
Yes.
Vegas took on Tortorella inside of the final 10 games, went all the way to the cup final, and this does not surprise me at all based on how Vegas operates. John Tortorella is not returning to the coaching staff. And to make this full circle, or at the very least a triangle, does he end up in Toronto?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, right now, so, do the Vegas Golden Knights bring back Bruce Cassidy as their head coach?
I swear, I have not thought that. I tell you that.
Hey, we don't want him to go anywhere because we want him to start over again next year,
like,
right?
Like, I mean, what is the domino here for Tortorella first and then Cassidy and whoever else here is?
The Edmonton Oilers and Mike Babcock could be looking and saying, look what Torts did in Vegas and brought him to the Stanley Cup final and brought in a defensive structure. Toronto could be in there, although Toronto seems like they've gone down the path of interviews with many, many potential coaches. So we'll see. But there is going to be a market for John Tortorella. And I don't mind this for Vegas in thank you, but no thanks right now, so that he has a leg up, that he can start. Like, I think Torts is going to be...
Yeah, because they're really known for that.
They usually put the bars in the wheels as soon as they can. You want to go somewhere? No, we're not going to
have that. In the spokes is what it is.
Is that what it is? Okay, thank you. The bars and the wheels is my way of saying
it. The same thing. Oh, my goodness. Well, Vinny Prospo won't be taking either of the head coaching openings because he's landed as an assistant in St. Louis. Man, honestly, I was not fully in the know when I said everything is happening when the show started.
Everything is happening in real time. No, here's the funny thing, because I played with Vinny Prospo a couple of times and he loved Torts.
I got to turn the heater down.
He hated Torts. So I thought, maybe Vinny will want to join Torts somewhere if Torts goes somewhere else. No, Vinny Prospo is joining the St. Louis Blues. Look. Mike Weber was
replacing
there.
Replacing a former Amherst Saber.
Assistant coach, yes. Yeah. Mike Weber was there after his stint with the Amherst as an assistant coach, went to St. Louis, moved on. Steve Ott was also there, but now he's in Springfield in the AHL. But Vinny Prospo leaving the Rochester Americans for an assistant coaching job with the St. Louis Blues. I think this is great for Vinny. He did some amazing stuff in Rochester. They had a great coaching staff with Michael Leone, Nathan Page, Vinny Prospo in that group. We saw before that with Seth Appert, with Michael Pekka and Mike Weber. So they've had some great
experience
in coaching down there.
The important names to remember, and again, the individual is most responsible for the individual's growth.
Yes.
But coaching is important. And Kulik was under Appert and Pekka and Weber, right?
Yes.
And then you talk about more recently, and it's Consta, and it's Noah Oslin, who kind of bridged that a little bit, right? So these are important pieces that have moved forward for the Sabres, so you always have to tip your cap.
Zach Metza, and coming in and playing a big part of it, too.
Yes.
You do have to tip your cap, and it's interesting, because you just said you get what you put in as an individual, as a player. I just picked up my daughter. She went to the Hobie Leadership Conference this weekend, and you know, as a high school student, and the first thing they tell you when you get there is you are going to get out of this what you put into it. It doesn't matter who your coaches are, whatever. It helps when you have a connection where your coach, and I think Vinny Prospo had a really good connection with the players, right? On the power play, developing their instincts and the energy that he brought. So great. He did some good things. He moves on to the NHL now with the St. Louis Blues.
Well, I don't know if producer Sam wants to redo the Twitter poll, but this is what we started with today, and now we've got days worth of things to focus on ahead.
Yes.
But what seed would you peg the Sabres for in the East next season? Is it one or two, meaning division champ? Three or four, which obviously would be home ice, which, by the way, my opinion, matters not. We've seen three of the last four Stanley Cup playoffs where the road team has won more than the home teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs. 5-8, do the Sabres make the playoffs? Right now, that's got 28% of the vote. Or 9 or lower in the East, meaning a miss of the playoffs.
Yeah, so right now, Omi's third or fourth is leading the way. And you know, it's interesting because maybe I'm looking at this more as what would be acceptable? What would I settle with? I said 5-8.
Don't settle.
I'm not settling, but I'm just saying is that because maybe Omi's doesn't matter, right? To me, like saying you can go out on the road and play well and win on the road. The Sabres did that this year, especially in the Boston series, going 3-0 in Boston. The Hurricanes went 8-1 on the road this year. They were 6-0 in the first three rounds, I believe, because it was 2-2-2. They're 6-0 on the road in the first three rounds, and then they ended up going 2-1 in the finals. They went 8-1. And on the road this postseason. So the road doesn't matter to me. I say there's going to be a logjam. Okay, we just saw Philly making a trade, right? And they're going to continue to try to find players and to get better. Maybe they move up. Maybe Florida moves up. Maybe Toronto moves up. Who knows what's going to happen? I say 5-8 to me is good. That's fine. If it's anything on top of that, that's cherry on top. But I'm good with 5-8.
What about the odds when you talk about this, you know, Sabres Live poll question and try to envision at this very, very early June date? It is the 16th. The draft, of course, is the 26th and the 27th here in Buffalo. But we haven't even come close to free agency yet, which is July 1st. And then whatever changes happen beyond that. Yes. So it's a tricky time, but the odds are always there. So the odds right now favor Carolina to win the East, as you would expect, at plus 330 because they were dominant in the regular season and then dominated all the way to the Stanley Cup title. Yep. The Lightning are number two. The Panthers are number three. Do you think it... Well, I think the Panthers jumping back to... It's not surprising, but is it interesting to you that everyone is this ready to assume that they will be back to their kind of quote-unquote rightful place of late?
Well, I'm asking you, who's going to play goalie for the Florida Panthers? And that's a big question. Like, right now you could say they'll find a goalie. Who is that going to be? Because they're not getting, well, he's a UFA. You know, he could go back with Sergei Bobrovsky, but I don't think that's going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think Bob's going to go somewhere
else. There are Binnington rumors out there, too.
Yes, there is Binnington rumors. The surprising part of the odds to win the Eastern Conference is the fact that the Sabres are seventh in the odds. That the Panthers, who missed the playoff, the Ottawa Senators...
Well, no, but the Panthers on history should be ahead.
They should be ahead.
I don't understand why the Devils are ahead.
The Senators and the Devils are ahead of the Buffalo Sabres. I don't get that. I know that Ottawa finished strong this season. They got in the playoffs, but they got swept by the Carolina Hurricanes. And I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of conversation next year about Brady Tkachuk. He wants to leave, this, that, the other thing. Mm. I'm not sure about the Ottawa Senators. So the fact that Ottawa and the Devils are ahead of Buffalo right now, I could see Montreal being slightly ahead of Buffalo. They just beat them in seven games in the second round. That's fine. But the fact that the Sabres are seventh in odds, I pick 5 through 8. So maybe that fits my narrative.
It kind of fits your narrative.
My narrative a little bit. But I don't like that Ottawa and New Jersey especially, and to a certain extent Florida, are ahead of Buffalo in the odds.
Mm-hmm. Stanley Cup odds? Where do you think Buffalo's at?
Stanley Cup odds, I think Buffalo is, well, obviously, if they're seventh
in the Eastern
Conference. I don't even
know. I'm legitimately asking the question.
They are probably outside the top 12 right now.
I'm going to lean on producer Sam to give us the Sabre Stanley Cup odds.
Yeah, because they're not on our graphic, and the graphic is the top 10.
Look on graphic for final Sabre odds.
And the fact, again, that the Ottawa Senators are 8th and the Devils are 10th in Stanley Cup odds is really weird. Hurricanes are number 1, get that. The Avalanche are number 2. I get that. The Avalanche being swept by the Golden Knights. The Oilers being fourth still is very interesting. But yes, I think the Sabres are outside the top 12.
Ducks are behind the Devils, and the Sabres are behind the Ducks. They are tied with Montreal at plus 2,700.
So, that's
12. So you're in the top half. Yeah, top, close to the top third, obviously. Yeah. But I think that's fair. Here's the funny, like, for whatever reason, the Devils is throwing me off a little bit today.
There's a huge
but
Jack Hughes influence.
But they're chronic underachievers the last 2 years, right? And that's why they've changed at the GM position with Sonny Mehta coming in, right? Yeah. And they are unlikely to get out of what their goaltending reality is. And on some days it's good and some days it's not. And Markstrom takes a lot of the heat there. But who knows? We're talking about a goalie trade to start today, along with the Tortorella news being out in Vegas. But, like, Joe Wall's gone to Philadelphia, so... This is the first domino of off-season change post-Stanley Cup win by the Carolina Hurricanes, who are in the Eastern Conference and are in the same division as New Jersey, right? Like, so.
But that goalie trade, what does that mean for the Sabres, who have their three goalies now and Devon Levi on top of
it? It doesn't mean anything
to
the Sabres. It means everything to what you were just talking about with who's going to play goal for Florida. Because once you start thinking outside of a box and go, you have to remember, like Danny Briere said,
There's always players
available. Yeah. And that means there's always goalies available. And if you just make a deal that you think is going to make you better, like, who's to say? I've been sitting here thinking that if New Jersey wanted to get out from Markstrom, and if Markstrom
was
willing, 2 years
at $6 million,
then just send him to San Jose. They would probably take him.
Well, San Jose is an interesting thing because, obviously, I look at free agents and goalies and the goalie market, and I'm thinking, who needs a goalie right now?
And they'll say they don't because they upped Nedeljkovic and obviously
Exactly.
Vaskarov. But if you're actually trying to win, and believe that that guy's a little bit better than the other two, then don't you have to try?
Is Chicago in that boat
too? Chicago's got $40 million in cap space. They can do whatever they
Chicago
want.
Chicago has Spencer Knight, who's supposed to be the guy, and then they have Söderblom, and they have, like, goalies.
Do they do what Philly did? Does Chicago, Chicago want to have a better 1B?
Exactly.
Because of what Philly
but
did
today. But there's going to be teams that are going to say, I'll take that Söderblom guy.
Yeah.
He's big, and he played well when he played, and I'll take him just like, you know, Philly is in. Who wants Sam Emerson? There you go. And Toronto was like, so there's my, what's Detroit doing? What are the Edmonton Oilers going to do? Is Vegas going to try to move Aiden Hill? Aiden Hill is a $6 million player. Are they trying to move him so they can get Carter Hart back in?
Yeah.
Or are they even upgrading maybe Carter Hart with somebody else?
But what if New Jersey, and I get it, trade protection and all the rest of it. But what if, like, out of nowhere, New Jersey likes Aiden Hill?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, we can make this work because this is the money we were going to give to Markstrom anyway. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I love the fact that we had a domino today.
Yeah, and the goalie market, as we talked to Shayna last week, it's always like, oh, there'll be plenty of goalie movement, and there's never any. And now we're like,
and the draft
June
is here.
The 16th, we're 10 days before the draft, and we got a goalie trade. Like, that to me, it tells you also, all these guys that are free agent,
yes,
that are looking for places, you better find a chair at 1 p.m. on July 1st, mm-hmm. because there may not be chairs for you to sit on until the season starts.
Shayna Goldman tomorrow to further that conversation. Time for D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
What was your best bench press back in the day?
Dude, I used to come in and they used to put 185 pounds on the bar. And I'd be like, what did the hashtag do? 135. Put 135. And I would go like five or six times.
I love your shoulder movement.
That's it. Yes. But, okay, so this is interesting because over the offseason, Rod Brind'Amour introduced what they called the blue-collar press. They were basically put in a 35-pound center block around the room. There was many of them. And then they would say after games, or sometimes guys would be leaving in their suits and they'd be like, did you do your press? Guys would grab the cinder blocks and put it over their head and do like six or seven of them and then put it down. They didn't realize that Rod Brind'Amour was playing chess while everybody else was playing checkers. As he said, the Stanley Cup weighs 35 pounds. And I want you guys to start to lift that 35 pounds over your head. They didn't know all season long. They just thought, blue collar press, blue collar press. And then they win the cup and it's come out that the cinder block was basically Rod Brind'Amour's way of projecting the cup over their heads.
Copycat syndrome coming, do you think?
Well, I'm wondering, like, did he get that from somewhere else? You know,
well, he's also the ultimate body guy, bench press guy.
Did you see,
like,
his
he's
picture?
Wired to think about. I, of course, who didn't? Like,
shirt off
right.
in the room.
It had to
I'm like,
happen.
Wait, that's Photoshop. And then you see the video, and you're like, no, that's not Photoshop.
I've been sitting there staring at him behind the bench during the playoffs, thinking he doesn't look as jacked as he used to.
Dude,
like,
he took his shirt off. Sorry, Rod the Bod is Rod the Bod, but that's very dazzling. Yeah. The fact that the blue collar press turned into a cup.
Well, your part-time network stole the Hockey Night in Canada theme years ago, so this was imminent. Yeah. The end of Hockey Night in Canada on CBC.
That's disturbing.
As Sportsnet is now going to have the Saturday night games,
well, for
right?
the last 12 years, Sportsnet have had the national package in Canada, just like ESPN and TNT now in the U.S. But on Saturday night, they had a partnership with CBC that the Hockey Night in Canada game was still going to be shown on CBC. Well, that is ending. Sportsnet and CBC are ending their partnership. So there will still be Hockey Night in Canada, but it will only be on Sportsnet. So the long time Foster Hewitt kind of running Hockey Night in Canada, welcome fans across Canada, United States, and Newfoundland, like the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's ending on CBC.
On CBC.
It will be on Sportsnet on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Only.
Yeah.
We won't be getting CBC on. Like, we get CBC on the cable here, right? And I won't be getting the CBC feed on my cable.
But you never
box.
Got it in high def, right?
It was better this year.
Was it?
It was. Oh, you didn't have the standard def. Like,
do you know
anymore.
My entire time at NHL def. Network? It never existed in Canada on HD.
Yeah. Yes, I know
like,
that.
What are we even doing? What is the point? Anyway, that's for another day.
With DAZN, I still get the Canadian feed on NHG.
How enthusiastic would your punch out be of a runner at second base trying to steal?
That was my game as an umpire. I loved baseball, and I was an umpire. And I used to, yes, you're out of here. But I never punch a guy that slid on second base. And I'm still trying to figure out, did he get him in the helmet? Did he punch him in the jaw? Like, that's a backhand fist that went down. But yes, I was always very, very enthusiastic about my call. Not as much as I know we're showing this one here. Maybe we'll show you next week. There's an umpire for youth baseball that was featured at either Good Morning America or the Today Show or whatever. He does it by himself behind home plate. And when there's a play on first base, he runs like the catcher. Yeah. And then he slides and he's, you're out of here. Like, if you're on baseball or softball, the number one thing, be active. And that ref was active in his call.
It's the enthusiasm we want in your evaluation of the 25-26 Sabres season if you attended a game. We want to hear from you. Complete our postseason survey at sabres.com/survey. You'll be entered for a chance to win Sabres jerseys and autographed pucks. Scott Wheeler from The Athletic, talking draft and more coming up.
By Seneca Resorts and Casinos, nothing else comes close.
We'll see you at the draft here in Buffalo on the 26th, and we also want you locked in for your seats for the 26-27 season, and you can do so with a 10-game plan. Enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, and a guaranteed seat location. Choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, both of whom are ranked higher odds-wise right now to win the East than Buffalo, so plan your signs accordingly, plus 9 more games. Learn more and secure your plan today at sabres.com/10. As promised, Scott Wheeler from The Athletic joins us here on Sabres Live today. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing well. We're in the home stretch here, fellas. It's like we're almost at a two-week, basically a two-week countdown here. So,
what number draft is this for you in a professional context?
Yeah, doing this work full time, this is my 13th draft class that I've sort of done this as a dedicated role. Obviously, about 10 of those at The Athletic and then a few prior.
Is it getting easier or harder? Do you make it tougher on yourself to dig in more, like the psychological questions and the physical testing result and all of that? Like, is there things that you push aside now that you're like, I don't need to look at this?
I've definitely honed and sort of shaped my approach much differently over the last several years than I did in the early years. I think I'm much better at it now than I was then. I look for different things. I know different people. I'm talking to more people. That part of it just comes with time, with trial and error, with sort of figuring out the way that the game is trending, the types of players that are having success. So that part of it, I've really worked very hard on. And yes, I think the simple answer is that I'm much more comfortable now than I was a decade ago. And I not just from what I'm looking for standpoint and how I watch the game, I think has changed a little bit over time, but also just from a resources standpoint in terms of my travel budget, from the resources that we use, things like Instat, which is the scouting service that we use, which allows us to just watch a player's shifts instead of watching an entire game. So I can watch a player play an entire game in 20 minutes now instead of in 2.5 hours. Little things like that, some of the data that's now available. We're just in a much better position now than we were even, frankly, 5-6 years ago.
Do you have a year? Have you ever looked back and actually crunched numbers on what you projected? And do you, like most scouts, have 1 year where you were like, oh my God, I was so on that year?
Yeah, there's both ends of the spectrum. Guys I've missed on big guys. There's been draft classes that I've outperformed the draft board. We measure that at The Athletic. I do a review of all of my lists over time, and I'm constantly going back and sort of not just doing redrafts and stuff like that, but doing full-on reviews of my rankings, guys I got right, guys I got wrong. One of the audience's favorite articles that I do at The Athletic every year is the players I was wrong about. People like to hear more about the players I was wrong about than the players I was right about. So there's a lot of that. And I think it's good. It's valuable. It's important to do that kind of work and to have those retrospects. I still take guff from Sens fans. The big one is Jake Sanderson. I liked Jake Sanderson a lot. I thought Jake Sanderson was going to be a top four stud. I would not have taken Jake Sanderson in the top five in that year and had him sort of outside of my top 10 in that year. So you take lessons from some of those players over the years that you've missed on. And with Jake, I just didn't see him being a 50-point, 55-point, 60-point defenseman. I didn't see that kind of offense in his profile when he was at the national program. But you learn from that. You're sort of a better evaluator when you have some mistakes like that along the way.
Now, it's always better to point out the ones that maybe everybody had at 60 or 70, and then you thought, man, I like this kid, and then it turned out to be a really good pick, maybe even earlier than others. So I mean, we're looking at the Sabres at 27 this year, but who is one player that maybe you're like, everybody's got that guy second round, maybe even third round, but I'm like, yeah, you know what, late first round could be a good spot. Is there somebody that stands out?
There isn't really a player like that in this class that stands out. There isn't a player in that sort of late first round that I've really stuck my neck out on that I'm sort of divorced from the consensus on, if you wish. There are a couple of players in that range that I still have in my first round, though, that people have softened on over the course of the year. The big one and easily the most polarizing player in this draft class is a kid by the name of Marcus Nordmark, a Swedish winger. One of the most talented players in this age group, still in my first round, still in the first round of several teams' lists, but there are teams that really, really, really don't like the player, and you watch
poor
the kid's player.
Gonna show up to Buffalo. We've been talking about him probably every show. He's going to show up in Buffalo. I think he's going to have a fan club just because they'll know who he is, and they'll be like, hey, you know what? We're just going to cheer for you, bud. Like, but you're right. He's very polarizing. What about a guy like... is it Ryder Cali? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, Ryder's a player who there are a few guys who I think could be really strong natural sort of fits for the Sabres, and Ryder is one of them. Cali is a I think they need a little bit more size. They need someone who can be a go-getter, who can sort of hunt and chase pucks. Ryder is a physical specimen. He performed extremely well in testing at the combine. He's a late player to playing high-level hockey. He didn't play sort of at that elite AAA level until closer to his OHL draft. He then gets picked. He sort of climbs the ranks with the North Bay Battalion. And he's a kid who just plays that sort of heavy forechecking, up and under sticks style of play, a north-south sort of pro-style guy. He'll be either a late first or an early second. There are a few kids in his profile who project safely as sort of third line NHL players who fit his profile kind of in that range for the Sabres. And he's one that I could really imagine they'd be keen on as sort of a complementary piece. He's never going to be on your first power play or a high-end skill guy, but he's probably going to be a 40-point winger in the league, potentially a 40-point center in the league. He is a natural center. And he's got sort of some real size and heaviness to his game. One of the strongest players in the class from a pure physical standpoint, and just a really safe bet to be a solid NHL player.
Now, I'm always interested by like the backstory. So Elite Prospect says that Ryder was born in Lugano, Switzerland, that he's a citizen of Canada and the Cayman Islands. Like, how does the Lugano, Switzerland, Canada, and Cayman Islands all come together?
There's two citizens of the Cayman Islands in this draft class. Obviously, Jackson Cover of the London Knights is the big one of the best stories of this class. Jackson grew up playing roller hockey, didn't play hockey at all until the pandemic. This year was only Jackson's fifth year of organized hockey. And now Jackson's going to be a second round pick like Ryder will be. They both sort of grew up on Grand Cayman, no hockey rinks, not a single ice rink, obviously, on Grand Cayman. And a lot of those kids, they just played travel tournaments or they came up and did some summer hockey camps up in Canada. And that's sort of how they were developed. And increasingly, I think a lot of kids are showing that you don't have to be, and you guys know this, but you don't have to be the 365 days a year hockey player from age five where it's just hockey, 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 hockey. I think increasingly teams are finding great athletes. There's another kid actually in the Sabres range, kid by the name of Maxim Sokolovsky, 6'7", 240-pound defenseman from the London Knights. Another kid who was late to hockey, late to playing high-level hockey, but just has the physical traits, the athleticism, the tools that NHL clubs look for, and then they're happy to work with those kids. You guys will remember from last year, the 33rd overall pick, Hoshi Wang out of China, who was the first pick of the second round last year at the draft. Increasingly, there are kids who are sort of finding their way through these different pathways, these different avenues to high-level hockey, and it's not just the Toronto kid who's been on the ice 7 days a week since he could walk, right? So I think that's very, very positive. It's positive for the growth of the game. We just had Norway have success at the Men's World Championships, right? Like the game is changing. It's not just being played in Sweden and Russia and Canada and the United States any longer at a high level. And I think that's really, really positive. And Cover's one of those kids. Callie is one of those kids. Sokolovsky's one of those kids. And frankly, all three of those names are names that are sort of in that late first range for the Sabres.
You have a couple others in that range for Buffalo?
Yeah, a couple who've kind of fit that Ryder Callie mold. If they're looking to add sort of that physical, hardworking, lunch pail, heavy, pro-style player, Gleb Pugachyov is a Russian kid who kind of really fits that identity in this class. Gleb is a big, strong, hardworking kid. Never going to be, again, like Callie, never going to be a PP1 guy, never going to be the flashy skill guy, but just a very, very hardworking, competitive, physical player who's got an NHL body, was very good at the pro level this year, better, frankly, in the second tier VHL and in the KHL than he was playing at the junior level with his peers. He kind of really fits that pro mold. Seamus Ignatovicius is another one. Ilya Morozov is a kid that I know the Sabres are high on. Morozov is a kid who played at the University of Miami this year. Just sort of another big, heavy, athletic, physical, competitive, well-rounded forward. Morozov, I'm not sure will be there. I'm pretty confident that Kali and Pugachyov will be there. Ilya Morozov's a kid who kind of might go a few picks before when the Sabres pick, but if he is there, profiles as that sort of future third line center. Like that's what you project Ilya Morozov to become in the NHL. And he's a player who I know that the Sabres have specifically spent a lot of time on, but a lot of teams in that 20 range have also spent a lot of time on Ilya. So, whether he's there, we'll see. If he is there, he's a name that I think will be near the top of the Sabres list.
We were talking about some of the names that you got right and some of the fan base that are like, oh, you got that guy wrong or whatnot. Here in Buffalo, we got like Yuri Kulik and Noah Oslin and Konstantin Hellenius and Radim Mirka. And, you know, you've got a list of players that fans are excited. So are you surprised or excited about some of these prospects from where you had them in their draft year to where they are right now?
Well, since you teed me up for it, I will take this time to pat myself on the back for a couple of kids. Benson's a big one that I was a big, big believer in. Like Benson's a kid that I was very high on, higher than a lot of people, both NHL scouts and people in the public sphere who do work, the kind of work that I do. I had Zach Benson sixth on my list when they took him ninth. I was a big, big believer, not just that he had that sort of dogged approach and was going to be a go-getter and a competitive sort of engine for your team, but also a big believer in the skill level and in the development runway that he had to become a better and better version of that. I think Zach Benson's going to get Selke votes at some point in over the course of his career. I think he's poised to take another big step. I know he took one this year, but I think he's got more in him.
I think Lady Bing is in his future too.
I don't know about the Lady Bing. That we might be getting a little carried away there. But he's a kid I was very, very high on. Frankly, that they've drafted in line with my list in a lot of areas. I was high on Kulik. I was high on Oostlund. I was high on Konstantin Hellenius. So even Jack Quinn back once upon a time, although Jack, I was maybe a little bit lower on. I think I had Jack a few spots lower than where they picked him. But they've been a team that has kind of lined up with my board over the last several years. And obviously not all of those kids have become star players, but they've all become very, very good NHL players. And they're a big reason why the Sabres were able to take the step that they were able to take last year. And Östlund in particular, I mean, it's impossible not to like the kid and the way he plays the game and how well-rounded he is, the way he skates, the smarts, all of that. Helenius has always been a sort of IQ player more than the sort of athlete, the natural sort of skater that I would say an Östlund is. And then Kulik obviously always had that big one-timer from the flank on the power play coming up and was a star with Czechia's national team coming up. And they did a good job to identify those players. I was actually probably a little bit too high on Peyton Krebs. Krebs is another one that I was a big believer in. Obviously, Krebs has kind of become more of a role player than an impact guy. And I was probably a little bit too high on Peyton in his draft year. But there's a real collection with the Sabres of kids that I was high on over the years.
Wow, you mentioned
some guys who haven't made it. Nikita Novikov.
Yeah.
There are some guys coming that I still like as well. So.
Well, the Quinn draft was, there was a lot of outside noise around that pick because Marco Rossi and Cole Perfetti were right around it.
Yep.
But, you know, you only have to go a couple picks beyond, and maybe everybody should have been higher on Anton Lundell, right? Like,
yep, and Anton Lundell's got the Stanley Cup ring now, so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that is why the draft is fun and whatever. What else do you do these days? Like, I know it's the season's over now. The Carolina Hurricanes won the Cup. Are you a World Cup guy? Are you paying attention to what's happening with the first week of group play? You know, I what's your team? Is Canada, U.S.? Like, I'm cheering for France. I'm like, go, les Cousins Bleus. Let's go. My cousin's up there in France. But who's your team and what do you like?
Well, I've married into a hardcore soccer family. My father-in-law is born and raised in England and lived there until he was about 30 years old, still has the thick British accent, him and his son. So my brothers-in-laws, they're hardcore England fans. They're actually going to an England-Ghana game in Boston next week here. Is sort of living out a dream for my in-laws. But I've become, honestly, my biggest fandom left. You guys know, like, once you're in hockey, it's hard to be a fan. I don't really consider myself a fan of any one team in hockey. I cheered on the Blue Jays. I was a sort of on the Blue Jays bandwagon when they made their run last year. But I've become my biggest fandom over the last few years has been following the Canadian men's national team. And I was dialed in at a bar in Kingston before the OHL draft last week to watch their opening game against Bosnia and Herzegovina. I'm excited for Thursday for the game against Qatar and then Switzerland next week. And I've really followed the Canadian men's national team really closely. We have a writer at The Athletic, Josh Cloak, who does a great job covering the Canadian sort of men's soccer scene. And I'm all in on Canada after Switzerland and Qatar tied. I'm all in on Canada potentially winning their group here.
Are you allowed to go in England, like a family, like supporter with a Canadian soccer jersey on, or will you be kicked out?
Yeah, they're all born and all the kids are born and raised here. My wife was born and raised here. So I would say that Canada is their second team after England.
So that works. Yes.
They're cheering for Canada as well.
We have a Sabres live poll question today. What seed would you peg the Sabres for in the East next season?
Ooh.
One or two, meaning a division champ, three or four, which would be home ice, 5-8, making the playoffs or not making the playoffs?
I like the Sabres to be a two or three team in the Atlantic. I don't think they're I think they're better than a wild card team, and I would expect them to be a two or three team in the Atlantic.
Do you give them home ice advantage, or is it like, you know, like I'm trying to separate between two and three. That's the hard part. Like, are they like top two in the Atlantic, or do you see them like Montreal and Tampa and Florida? And like there's a lot of teams that that will compete for that.
Yeah, I think Florida's coming here. So I worry about Montreal maybe taking a bit of a step back. I think there are still some flaws to that Habs team. They're young. They're going to continue. A lot of their core players are going to continue to get better. I think Ivan Demidov will take a step. But I do still worry a little bit about their depth and the quality of that blue line in Montreal. I think the Sabres, I would probably edge the Sabres over the Habs at this stage. We'll see after free agency and the way that this summer goes. But it's the Panthers and the Lightning that I still worry about. I know that the Panthers took a huge step back last year, but I think a lot of that had to do with injuries. And I would not be the least bit surprised if the Florida Panthers were one or two in the Atlantic again next year and back to sort of being a dominant team in the Eastern Conference. And I think the Lightning are still, frankly, going to be there. We'll see on the health of Victor Hedman. That kind of makes or breaks, I think, the Lightning. But if Hedman is back, if Hedman is fully healthy, I still probably give those two veteran teams a bit of an edge over the Sabres, which would have the Sabres at 3 in the Atlantic for me.
Now, I mean, we talked about the odds earlier in the show, but the Ottawa Senators are 4th in Eastern Conference odds. Like, I mean, it goes Carolina, Tampa, Florida, and the Ottawa Senators. Are you surprised by the love that Ottawa still gets? Like, I thought they were going to beat Carolina in the first round. They got swept in 4 games. And I think people still see Ottawa as a, man, they have a lot. They have, you know, they could have Linus Solmark being a great goaltender when he's there, whatever. Like, are you still surprised by the love Ottawa's getting?
I think Ottawa has a bit of a depth issue as well, but we saw last year with the emergence of guys like Michael Amadio and Shane Pinto and sort of a third line checking role that there's maybe some sneaky depth there. And then the big dogs are ready to be big dogs. Like Tim Stützle is ready to be a top player in the league. Jake Sanderson already is a top player in the league. They have the star power. In theory, they should have the goaltending. I do worry a little bit about the depth of their blue line as well. I think they need another guy or two on that back end to really solidify it and sort of put them into the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference. But for a long time, the criticism of the Sens was that despite the fact that they were winning games, that their underlying numbers were sort of signaling that they weren't actually a top team. And then last year, it kind of flipped. Last year, they were probably a better team on paper, a better team in terms of the data, a better team in terms of shot generation and the way that they defended than the actual wins and losses sort of indicated. So I do think they've kind of taken a bit of a step here. And I mean, I'm sure you guys would agree. I think the Atlantic is the best division in hockey right now. Without I think the Leafs are going to be under a new head coach next year. I think the Leafs are going to be a better team. Maybe you wonder a little bit about the Detroit Red Wings, but from top to bottom, the Atlantic is as strong as it has been in a long, long time. And it's not just the Boston Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Leafs and the Panthers now. Those other teams, the Sabres, the Habs, the Sens, have really taken a step here. And like I think all there's 6 or 7 playoff caliber teams in the division, and they're only 4 or 5 of them are going to make it. So that I think it's one of the storylines of the year heading into next season is sort of
Scott,
who comes
we'll follow
out.
Follow up and see you in a week and a half here in Buffalo for the draft. Thanks so much.
Cheers, guys.
Scott Wheeler from The Athletic. We're Rap Sabres Live when we come back. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Where are you at for next season? We wanted to know. We asked you, what seed would you peg the Sabres for in the East next year? And right now, we see 52% of respondents at Sabres Live going with 3 or 4, home ice.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think anybody is really looking at the Metropolitan Division other than the Hurricanes as a contender for top 4. And then after that, it's Tampa, Florida, Montreal, Ottawa, Buffalo. That's where they're all at.
Real quick, World Cup update in less than 43 seconds.
Okay, lots of draws yesterday. All ties, 0-0, Spain and Cape Verde. And then 1-1, 1-1, and 2-2. There was some really, really interesting. I watched last night New Zealand and Iran. That was a good game. It ended up 2-2. But the goalie for Cape Verde, 40-year-old man who gained 8 million followers on social media after his clean sheet against Spain.
Yes, and tonight, completely different set of eyeballs, numerically speaking, for the Calder Cup. But nonetheless, it is hockey, and it's in Toronto, and it will be Chicago and Toronto. Game 3, the Marlies are leading the series 2-0.
Home ice advantage flips quickly on Chicago. They lost
There's
both
no
games.
Such thing.
I know, but especially when you do 2-3-2, because you lose one of the first two, and then you have to play 3 in the other team's building.
I should have known, but I didn't. But maybe have come across one of the more interesting birthday facts in Sabres Amerk's history today.
Okay.
Randy Moeller's brother, Mike.
Yes.
Happy birthday. He's 65 today. I believe that the Moellers are the only brothers that ever played for both the Sabres
and the Amherst.
And the Amherst, because Randy landed there for three games late in his career.
Yes.
And Mike actually won the Calder Cup with the Amherst in 83 with the first brother tandem that I thought might have done this, J.F. Sauve leading the scoring for the Amherst that year. But Bob, when he played in the AHL, it was with Hershey.
Oh, so it wasn't in Rochester. Yeah.
Anyway,
happy birthday.
Flush out of time. Enjoy the birthday special announcement tomorrow. We'll see you then.